Good morning. This is Mike Murphy. First of all, very happy 19th birthday to Democracy Now! KKFI was there the very first day it aired. One of a handful of stations to air this program 19 years ago today, and now they're on over 1,300 media outlets throughout the country, throughout the world, I believe. And so happy birthday to Democracy Now! And welcome to Tell Somebody. And today is the third and final installment of the Told You So Consortium shows before Tom Clammer comes back and rescues the listeners from the babble of the rabble. Talking about rabble, our guests this time of two of Kansas City's finest rabble rousers, Reverend Esther Holzendorf and Professor Dave Kingsley. Reverend Holzendorf is president of the Board for Consolidated Social Work Services. Dave Kingsley and my co-host, Jeff Humfeld, are members of that board as well. Today's discussion is about a model block project on the 3800 block of Chestnut, initially suggested by Brandon Ellington in collaboration with CSWS, which is Consolidated Social Work Services, and to be done with the cooperation of a number of groups working together. A lot has happened since those formative days. Brandon has been elected now to the Missouri House of Representatives and reelected, and different aspects of the project have fallen to different groups. Along the way, there's been ample opportunity to work with a local philanthropic foundation, city and county government, numerous contractors, and more. There have been some important gains, some losses, and a whole lot of life lessons, and even some glimpses of the seedy underbelly of what must be done to get things done in a neighborhood many would rather forget existed. So, good morning and welcome to Tell Somebody, Esther and David.
Good morning. Thank you, Mike.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Sure. So, let's start at the beginning. How did this project come about, and exactly what is the project? What is a model block project?
The Chestnut Street Model Block Project is actually about 4 years old. A group of people got together with, well, Brandon Ellington. That was before he was elected to office. And we were talking about the horrible way that certain neighborhoods are neglected, the blight, the fact that children were living in places that look like war zones. And so one day, as Brandon and I were talking, he said he wished there was some way that we could do something about the situation. So I said, well, Brandon, how would it be if we could get a group or groups together, and let's take the 38th and Chestnut Street block and see if we can't just get some of that property, remodel this block, and let it be a model block that everybody could see that out of something very negative, a positive can come if enough people get together and decide they're going to make it a positive. And so that's kind of the history of how it actually started.
So what was it about that block, or what is it?
Well, it was just a block that was in such terrible shape. And Brandon and his group, Voices of the People, had already been down there doing some work with the neighbors, you know, trash cleanups and that sort of thing. So it just kind of seemed that would be the place to start.
Okay. And so what was it that, what did you expect to happen, or do you expect to happen?
Well, what the vision is, And it continues, and it will come to fruition, but the vision is to turn this block around, to work with the neighbors and the neighborhood and the community to develop this project such that we will have a place that people feel safe in. We want to have a family resource center. We want to have a reading room. We want to have a garden project that is viable, that is going to be a positive for the community, where they can come and get fresh vegetables. We're also going to have a wildflower butterfly garden to help the monarchs, because, as we know, a lot of people know the monarchs are an endangered species. So what we want to see happen is that block to turn around.
Oh, that's Well, that's
and if
moment.
I might add, I think in the bigger picture, this house should become a focal point, a headquarters, so to speak, of community organizing. There's a lot of land in the neighborhood, but even on this block, that could be available. And so we would like to see the community begin to look at the idea of taking some control of the neighborhood and realizing that the city is probably not, without a lot of push, going to improve the neighborhood.
You know, I think one of the things, too, this is Jeff Humfeld, and one of the things that I look at is I've always looked at this as throwing water on top of a grease fire, and it splatters all over the place. And that's what I see of this project. I hope that this is that grease fire, that the water's thrown on here in this one block, and it jumps over and spreads to the whole community and starts spreading into other blocks in the area, saying, "Hey, yeah, we can do that too." So,
yeah. In anything that people want to make happen, we can do it, be it good or bad. I am convinced that the plight of the poor, those things that happen east of Truth, didn't just happen. They were created. You know, the last 40 years, we've had a war on just about everything that's imaginable. We've had war on crime, war on drugs.
On the poor.
War on the poor. That's what it's been. War on people, really.
Yeah.
And now the latest is the mental health people have decided that people who live in these areas, they are somehow mentally ill. And so somebody figured out a way to write a grant, and they can get money. So to us, it's double victimization. It's like saying to people, you're poor because you don't really want to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Well, they don't have any boots. And so, you know, this is what Consolidated Social Work Services is all about. We're about enlightenment. We're about education. We're about connecting the dots. We're about putting things in proper perspective. And what we want the people out there to understand is that you have a voice, and you need to let your voice be heard. There are folks in this city who have been charged with the responsibility of making sure that these cities did not fall into the dismal states that they're in. It didn't just happen. These things are caused, and hopefully today we can kind of get into not just the effect of poverty, not just the effects of violence, not just the effects of drugs, but the causes. I think we really need to go to the cause, the mortgage fraud. Why was that allowed to happen? Mm-hmm. Why was it allowed to continue? The Kansas City Star has articles, and we have copies of those articles. It goes back as far as 2007. The city was aware of folks like Barbara and other folks like that were actually flipping these houses, creating this chaos, stealing the equity from the people who own those houses. And keep in mind, now, once upon a time, black folk could not live past 27th Street. So when the white folks who own those houses decided they could move into newer and better housing, they kind of passed those old houses on to black folk, in which they really, a lot of those families, they kept those houses up for years.
Mm-hmm.
They developed their equity, and that's where black wealth mainly is in the property. So what happened? Here comes the mortgage fraud. Now, I want someone to tell me that nobody in the city of Kansas City in a position of responsibility knew that this was happening. We have done research on it. We know where the owners of this property is. So anyway, I'm going to let Dave and Jeff talk a little bit, because I don't want to get in. But
I think what you said when we start out, this was created. Let's go back to the Federal Housing Administration, 1932. Their underwriting manual redlined any area where there were African-American people. So the whites fled to Johnson County, Prairie Village, the Nichols development, because they could get government loans. An African-American person couldn't. I don't know how many people really understand how this developed. Jumping way ahead, even though that ended, the conditions were created, that was still a viable neighborhood until it was destroyed by what I call fire, finance, insurance, and real estate. You know, when investors came through that neighborhood flipping property, we know, we've researched who owns the property there. It's foreign, out-of-state investors. We know that the city, one of the problems we've had with the city of Kansas City is they just don't care. And we have pretty good examples of the trash on 38th Street between Montgomery and on Chestnut, where the city lets its trash pile up. They let the houses on the 3800 block. The land bank houses are sitting there with total code violations, for which we would be cited for even minor violations. So it's just one of the craziest situations, but we have to go back to this is created and it's allowed to continue.
Yes.
Well, and I'd like, Dave, I'd like you to go into a little bit of that ownership problem, because I think it really does go to how these neighborhoods were allowed to fall into disrepair. These folks were sold a bill of goods quite often.
Right.
You know, this is an investment property, and, you know, we'll rent it out and all this other stuff. And we had, I mean, this is an international problem, not just a local problem. So why don't you tell a little bit about some of the properties on the block?
Well, what we see happening in the neighborhoods that are blighted, so-called, is the real estate industry, the finance industry, will develop what they call trusts, where they will put a lot of these houses into a trust and bundle them, and then investors will buy into that trust, their tax write-offs. So that sort of is compelling. They have no interest in improving the property. Their interest is writing losses, because at the end of the time frame those trusts are set up, they're ended, and the investors don't expect to get a profit. I know somebody who's invested in one of those, people with a lot of money. So they look for those. Now, on our block, we see investors from Australia. It's a fund for people who have a 501, or what we call the pension funds. They probably don't understand what they have. They were probably sold a bill of goods. We have investors from Maryland. We have investors from Colorado. We have two lots are owned by a guy in Paris, vacant lots that are not kept up.
And that is Paris, France, not Paris, Texas.
That's right.
That's right.
And so... there's no sense that we want to invest in this property and make it a better neighborhood, because we're not part of that neighborhood. We don't even know the neighborhood. Now, one other quick thing I want to say. I researched the property tax rates throughout Johnson County, and when you look at what the property taxes are on those homes where you have an elderly fixed-income person or even a middle-class person living, they're paying taxes higher than Overland Park, much higher than Overland Park. And so, but yet their property is deteriorating. So the value that they're getting out of their property is deteriorating, and they're not being taxed on what it's really going to return to them. And just one other quick thing on that, the city is not then putting back into that neighborhood the taxes it's taken out. Mm. That's sort of what we call internal colonialism.
Mm. Yeah, very interesting. We're listening to Tell Somebody. The last voice you just heard was Dave Kingsley. He's here in the studio along with Esther Holzendorf and Jeff Humfeld. And we're talking about the model block project on 3800 block of Chestnut. And we'd also like to invite listeners to join in on the conversation. And that number is 816-931-5534. We're going to take our first break, and when we come back, I want to hear from you guys maybe about what some of the things that have been accomplished on this block, and despite what sounds like a lot of obstacles. So we'll be right back. All right, we are back in the studio. Tell Somebody, And I asked the question before the break. I asked you guys some of the things that have been accomplished on this model block we're talking about, a 3800 Chestnut.
Jeff, why don't you just kind of go ahead and tell them about who helped us to get the property and how we got it and where it came from and that sort of thing.
Well, we had originally gotten a house, one of the houses on the block from the land bank, Jackson County Land Bank, I guess it is. And we worked on that project for a while and realized that the cost of repairs for that particular house were going to be really significant. And so we went back to the land bank and we started looking at other parts on the property or other properties on the block and actually found a much better house that did not need quite so much work, and were able to make a trade or get the newer house. And we also did a trade-off with someone else that took over the original property. The land bank properties, I don't have a whole lot of information right with me at the moment on how you would get a hold of the land bank, and but they bundle properties. They have lots of properties. This is the old land trust properties and some other properties that have come to them once again because of the foreclosure crisis and stuff. And we applied for and became the first recipient of one of the new Community Capital Fund local initiatives. They wanted to work with smaller groups, and they gave away every year they're granting funds to small local groups in three denominations. $20,000, I believe the next one was,
I think it was
$10,000, and then the other was like $2,500
or something. $2,500
or something like that. Wow. Yeah. So we were the first recipient of the $20,000 grant, and we've used that to improve the property and get it close. We still need to raise funds to finish the house and get the Reading Center open. We hope to do that this spring.
So the Reading Center, that's going to be in this house?
Yes. Yeah. It's on the block. We've also used some of those funds to help us build one of the community gardens that we have on the block. We're hoping to expand that type of project into other parts of the block and into other parts of the neighborhood.
Let me ask you something, Luke. What's the percentage of occupied properties on the block? Is it 50% or less or more?
It's about 50%.
Really?
There's 37, I think, houses on that block. And I can real quickly count up.
It's less than 50%.
Probably less than 50%.
I think it's 8.
Yeah.
Out of all the houses from 3800 to 39th Street, I think there are 8 that are occupied.
Mm-hmm. 8 out of 37.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, we're way below 50%.
Wow.
And the houses that were vacant.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, criminal behavior would move into those houses, criminal activities.
Right.
The last time I looked, the biggest problem we had was a house with a lot of prostitution and drugs. It's been boarded up.
Mm-hmm.
And that house was owned by someone in Maryland. I tried to call them. Never would return my call.
So I'm interested in these 8 families that do live on this block. So is there turnover amongst those? I mean, are these the same 8 families that have been there, that were there, or is there constant churn, turnover?
Well, there are some that are, like you say, are constant. They've been there for, some of them for years, and actually we're going to be naming the Reading and Resource Center after one of the folks on the block, Mrs. Todd. She was a school teacher for many years. And, still lives on the block, really wants to see things turn around. She doesn't want to have to move into a nursing home or go somewhere else. And so, she's been there for a long time. But then there's like anything else, there's rental properties and stuff, and those are always turning over and all. We have a guy that lives just a couple houses up from the property that we have that's been there for many years. I really don't know exactly how long. And then there's, you know, a young man that's living in the house next to him who's been there for some time, but it is a rental situation. You know, things could change for him, and he could be, you know, looking for someplace else, cheaper or whatever, at any time. I mean, that's just the nature of you know, these areas, especially that are absentee-owned.
Yeah. So I imagine these people, the people that have been there for quite a while especially, are appreciative that you guys are there. Or is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, that is a fair assessment. They're very glad that we have taken the initiative to come down, and just our presence there has made a difference. And I really have to say, I can't stress this strongly enough, that it takes building relationships. This didn't happen overnight.
Right.
And folks say, well, y'all been down there for 4 years, and you know, what are y'all doing and all? What you have to understand is that you have to spend time with people. You just have to be on the block. You have to, you know, go and help with things that they may need at their house, or try to get some resources for them. You actually begin your work before you open your office. And so they're glad we're there, and we've been able to do some things to help some people just simply by being down there. And I think a lot of the criminal activity has it hasn't gone away completely, but it is a lot better than it was. And so we are working very closely with those now. There is a, as Jeff was saying, the man that lives two doors down from us, he's been there a long time. I think that was his family home place. Across the street, a lady and her brother live there. That was their home place. So they've been there for a while. Okay. The house next to that was the count's home. It's vacant. They both died. And then the son died. Then that's Miss Todd's place. She's been there 60-some years.
Wow.
Then there's probably a couple of more people that actually own the property, and they live in the property. But other than that, most of the ones that, if they are occupied there, are either they're rental properties.
I think, you know, this neighborhood 20 years ago was a viable working class neighborhood. And what we, the strengths of the neighborhood, I think, are people who still have a vested interest. Mr. Davis owns two houses. He rents them out. He used to live there. But he's in the city. He cares. There are, I would say, three landlords that I know of that really do attempt to be responsible owners. But what we see happening, and I think what one other dimension of this for us, is we see a neighborhood change practically from day to day, and it's not getting better. And I think for us, it gives us insights into this city. And I think you can't disconnect our neighborhood from what's happening, say, at the Power and Light District, where we have revenue bonds, money being put into that, gentrifying that area. $14 million of taxpayer money just went to Cordish Corporation.
Correct.
Because they couldn't, those bonds are revenue bonds. They're supposed to bring in $20 million a year, and they only brought in $6 million. So the taxpayers put $14 million in the Power and Light District. They're not putting anything that I can see. Maybe a little street work here and there, a little sidewalk. But overall, the attitude of the city seems to be, let it fall down.
If it's east of Cruz, it doesn't matter. And that is not just an attitude that people have. It's the reality, because we're down there. You can see it. You walk, you see all kinds of trash and garbage and tree limbs, and just, it's horrible. And I don't know exactly how or what to do about it, but I know we're going to have to do something, because we cannot continue to allow the inner city of Kansas City, Missouri, to look the way it is looking now. Because we have statistics to show when you have this type of blight and uncaring, it breeds a culture of violence.
You raised an interesting word, blight. Isn't that what those TIF tax incentive
good
things
point.
Are
good
for?
Point.
Like that. That's
absolutely.
Instead that built like Zona Rosa,
yeah.
and the Power and Light District
and
the weapons plant,
yeah.
and the Kansas City WMD factory.
Absolutely.
I mean that's.
You're absolutely correct.
They called that. It was a soybean field, a working soybean field, and they called it. They called it blighted.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely correct. And, you know, that $14 million that we had to pick up on those revenue bonds in the Power and Light District, think of $14 million for programs to employ kids in the neighborhood that we're in.
Mm.
You know, I know what it feels like to be standing in the garden working and have three 14-year-old young men walk up to me wanting a job. Now, I don't have a job.
Mm.
What's going to happen with those young men?
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do with their day in the summertime? If we want to stop violence and we want to stop crime, one way to do it would be to get programs for kids. So I think that's been very, very a big learning experience for me.
You know, Dave, you make a good point, and this is one of the things that one of the issues that we've talked about, and one of the things that we would like to do with the gardening projects is find ways to develop actual business opportunities for people off of those, people that want to make, you know, mulch or, you know, worm farms or just all sorts of different things that can actually become, you know, a little bit of a money-making thing for somebody to help them take the next step to get out of, you know, the situation that they're in.
That the whole gardens thing also would help with, you know, the
yes.
and mitigating that whole food desert problem that exists.
Yes. Yeah. Now, you know, there was that it did just open up, what was it, Aldi's at 39th and Prospect, which is a very good thing for that neighborhood. But as somebody said, you know, yeah, but Aldi's for the most part is processed food.
It is, yeah.
And what we're looking to do is get good healthy food, vegetables and the like, in the hands of people that live in the area. They, you know, the variety and the quantity of vegetables that Aldi has is limited because of the size of their store. It's not a huge supermarket. So,
well, I think that the bigger picture too, and we have to start talking to progressive and liberal groups about this, is that conditions for the community of poor people of color particularly, is worsening.
Mm-hmm.
Worsening.
Mm-hmm.
And the economic system as it's moving is not going to change that. In fact, just this morning in the Kansas City Star is a editorial. They weren't harsh enough under the Clinton administration on the welfare program. Now they're going to cut it even more in Missouri, mm-hmm. to where it's almost below human standards. It is below human standards. So what Jeff is saying, and Esther, we talk about connecting the dots. I think we have to begin to develop a parallel economic system because there is a lot of land, and my view is let's get that land.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get our hands on that land, and let's begin to use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, good point.
If you want to call in and get your 2 cents in on this conversation, you can call 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534.
Let me ask you folks, are you aware of anyone else doing this kind of thing in the metro?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not either.
I'm just not aware.
Yeah.
I expect that there probably is somewhere some efforts, and, you know, this is one of the things and one of the reasons why I had suggested this whole show to to Mike was that we have started down a path that others can follow. And, you know, once again, the Community Capital Fund is a good place to start, I think, for folks to get a, you know, develop their ideas. They do a number of different things to help people really envision what it is they're trying to accomplish. And you can get a hold of them, the Community Capital Fund. Their number is 816-502-9584. They're down at 19th and Vine. You try and get a hold of Christine Vaughn. They're also on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook. So, you know, there's a place that you can go to possibly get something to happen for your group and maybe get that seed money to actually get something started.
And we would certainly be glad to collaborate with
yes.
anyone. We know that there are those who are involved in the gardening project. And we are really interested in working with individuals or groups who are not afraid to challenge a system. The system is not just broken. It's just really out of control. And we're not for pulling down governments or overthrowing governments. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about positive revolutionary change.
Okay. Well, we seem to hit a spark. We got two callers. We'll take the first one. Caller, what's your name and what part of town you're calling from? You are on the air.
Hi, this is Artis Clark. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you folks hear him?
Yes.
Yeah, we hear you.
Okay. Hi, I grew up there at 37th and Montgall, which is just a block over.
Yes.
And in the 50s and the 60s, LAD, Sanford B. LAD, was the local grade school. And one question I wanted to ask, and I'll get off the phone, are there any plans to kind of revamp the grade school? Because it seems to serve a higher purpose for that area. And then Canaan Baptist Church was there at 37th and Chestnut for years. Those of us who were in the area in the snow time this time of the year, there was a hill between 38th and Montgall and Chestnut, and we'd ride it down, and some of you might remember the name, Tutti Frutti Hill.
Yes.
We had a good time on that hill, you know, just in the summertime with our go-karts and then in the wintertime with the sleigh rides. But I'll always remember that area. But my concern is, you know, putting the reading. I worked at the Central High School Public Library, the children's section. And it is a fantastic thing where some of us could come in and help and, you know, do the storytelling in the summertime. That's fine. But don't forget about the grade school there if there is a chance to still save that and, you know, help it serve the greater purpose for all segments of the community in that area where, you know, it would just be a larger service. Just a thought. And I'll hang up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, you make a very good point, and it is something that we've talked about with other folks in the neighborhood and with the Neighborhood Association also. And, you know, we've talked with groups of contractors that work in the area and that some of them live in the area, and they're saying, you know, we'd love to get a hold of this building or at least part of it so that we could start holding classes to teach young people how to do construction. You know, there's other folks that, you know, would like to see some kind of a senior center or day center or something of the sort in that building also. At the moment, we're kind of focused on our particular project and our particular block, but we are and have been working with the Neighborhood Association to try and see what else other interest is there and develop some of that.
So you guys are actually part of the Neighborhood Association now, I guess.
Yes, yeah. We're members.
Yeah. We are trying to develop the Oak Park Neighborhood Association. We're not, you know, as an organization and as individuals, we're not really sure
right.
Where that organization is right now. It is very important that we have strong neighborhood organizations, and right now we do not have one in Oak Park. So it is important that the folk in Oak Park do whatever it is they need to do to come into compliance and to strengthen that organization, because it is much needed.
All right. Well, good point. If anyone wants to join in the conversation, the number is 816-931-5534. We do have someone else on the line. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and what part of town are you calling from?
Susan, South Kansas City.
Hi, Susan.
hi. I missed the very beginning, so you may have answered this already, but I certainly heard that there are some very great challenges, like the absentee ownership, and that some of the properties are actually owned in real estate trusts and that kind of thing, where clearly the owners would never care or be easy to engage. And then the city and the lack of any clear help coming from the city and all. So my question, I have two questions. One is, what ultimately is the kind of goal, or are the goals that you have around the model block? And the other is, besides money, what kinds of ways can people who would like to be of assistance with you, what can other people do?
Well, I think the broader strategy that we're working on is to take an area that is blighted, begin to take over property, and in the long run see a cooperative area of the neighborhood where people are working together to take care of themselves and take care of each other, for instance, through developing enterprises, developing cooperative relationships, and putting political pressure to get the city more responsible and bringing in funding into the neighborhood. So that, I hope that answers your question, because I think we're looking at a strategic plan of about 5 years at least from now before we have picked up more property and that we have developed those properties on that block.
Yes. In doing research, and the gentleman just prior to this caller calling in mentioned the way that neighborhood looked. And that hill between 38th and Montgomery and 38th and Chestnut, we have been able to get work with the city, and they have paved that. But what we need now, we need people to be involved. We need folk to get in touch with us. We could use help finishing up the remodeling of this property. We need floors done. We need painting done. So if you know of anyone who could come and just help an hour a day, 2 hours a day, whatever, you know, anything that anyone can do is appreciated. We just want to be able to get up and moving at least by the first week of May. So we appreciate you calling in. Anything you can do is
appreciated.
What's
the best way to get a hold of you?
You can call our office, 816-965-8137, and ask for Esther, 816-965-8137.
You know, one of the things I want to address is an issue, because when you go into a neighborhood like this and try and do something, it's not a matter of doing for people. It's a matter of doing with people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when people hear that, oh, we're starting to gather up property in an area or something like this, that kind of frightens some folks. And, you know, this is the thing. When you look at what the land bank is doing and what they're tasked to do is to get rid of those properties and get them back on the tax rolls, get them into the hands of people or organizations. And one of the ways they've been doing that is they've been bundling numerous properties together and giving them over or selling them over, as the case may be, to, you know, people who are contractors or people who are developers of the type. And in that aspect, we are not a whole lot different than them. except that our aims and our methods are different. We're not there to make a profit. We're not there to flip houses or anything else. We're there to help create community, and that's what we're trying to do. And that's why earlier when Esther was talking about, you know, before we ever even really started any kind of physical work on the blocks, we were talking to neighbors, we were talking to people, because we're trying to not just build, you know, an empire here. We're trying to create community and help the community come back. Mm. I do remember these neighborhoods when I was young, and that's been a while ago, back in the 60s and early 70s, and I knew numerous people. Although I didn't live in that area, I lived on the other side of town. I knew numerous people that I went to high school with or whatever that lived in these areas, and they were good neighborhoods. They took care of each other. They watched each other. And this is the kind of thing that we want to try and foster and bring back.
And I appreciate Jeff for bringing that up, because it is important for people to realize we are a very diverse group of people. We're male, we're female, we're white, we're black, we're Asian. This is not about color. This is not about us trying to take over a neighborhood. This is about us working with a neighborhood to bring the neighborhood back. Because when you define neighborhood, it's defined as a place. It's real simple. A neighborhood is a place. And when you define community, it's people who have something in common. And so we're not there trying to lord it over anybody or trying to rescue anybody. We're not down there to try to save anybody. That's not our job. We're there to work in the community to try and bring the community back. We certainly didn't cause the blight. We did not cause all of the things that's going on down there. So I hope it's nobody out there that thinks, well, there's a bunch of white folks and a bunch of black folks down there trying to take over a neighborhood. I think it's time for us to confront those kinds of issues. And if that kind of dialogue is going forth, let's put it to rest right now. Today, that is not true. We are a group of people who work out of our pocket for the most part to bring back a neighborhood, working with those individuals who, like us, are in the neighborhood and want to make it a better place. That's what we're about.
All right. Well, thanks. We're going to go to our second break right now, but I do want to remind our call listeners, if you want to join in, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. We'll be right back. Dave Kingsley, Esther Holzendorf, Jess Humfeld, Mike Murphy here, talking about the Model Block Project on at the 3800 block of Chestnut. And during that break, we talked off mic a little bit about dropout
rates.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, why should we be concerned about that?
One thing I want to say before we ever say that, and it was brought up earlier, was the grade school LAD is closed, and this is one of the things that's happened in all of these neighborhoods, is that these grade schools were closed, and it's hard. You don't have a neighborhood school that is a focal point for the neighborhood anymore.
Exactly. So. And there are 26 neighborhood schools were closed. Now, how brilliant is that?
Wow.
So in doing research for Dave and I, we go and we make these talks and we work with small groups, larger groups, anybody that'll invite us to share this information. We've done the research, so now we just want to get the information out. So I'm going to read this. Dropout rates, there are some schools that are known as dropout factories. Blacks, Latinos, American Indian, and Native Alaskan students attend schools with higher concentration of first-year teachers at a higher rate, 3 to 4%, than white students, 1%. English learners also attend these schools at slightly higher rates, 3%, than non-English learners, 2%. That is according to the U.S. Department of Education Office for Civil Rights, March 2014. Let's talk about the prison industrial complex. The prison industrial complex is the single most reason for the spike in single parent households. The increase in urban violence and the vast urban decay we have been seeing in the black community over the last 40 years. This is according to Dr. Boyce Watkins. Dr. Watkins, author of the book, The Eight Principles of Black Male Empowerment says that capitalist greed and the profitability of prisons have turned young black children into a commodity. Do you all have any comments?
Yeah, I think, Esther and Jeff, we know that what's predictable. Mm-hmm. You create the conditions,
all right,
then you will get the results.
Okay.
And I think the bigger picture for us, we're in a neighborhood, but we see a neighborhood that's not connected to the city's development, to a participating. We talked to Judge Bland, as you recall, mm-hmm, who said, you know, there are some neighborhoods in this city, if you raised a child there, it'd be child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are children there. And he, you know, what we have to recognize is the money in this city is going to the upper income levels. Let me give you an example of the TIF funding. The last report we got out of a professor at UMKC who did a study of tax increment financing, only 6% went to the third and fifth districts. The rest went to the first. It went to the upper income levels. So to stop the blight, to stop the deterioration of the neighborhoods and the people living in them, and I think that's what you and Jeff are talking about, you close the schools, you take away the amenities, you let only the poorest of the poor live there or want to live there, then you will get what we got.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And this is something I produce Jaws of Justice Radio on Monday mornings here on KKFI, and this is a subject that we've talked about over and over again. And, you know, one of the aspects to this, and I'm going to go back to the whole idea of the neighborhood schools, is that in our schools now, violations of school policy are disciplined not by administrations, but by the police.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the, you know, this is the criminalization of being young and stupid, you know, or learning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just wrong. And I think that if we had some of these neighborhood schools, parents would be in those schools more often.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if their kids bus to a school, you know, 5 miles away, it's hard for them to get over there. Even if they're a stay-at-home parent, it's not necessarily easy for them to get into that school and be there. Where if the school is 3 blocks away or 4 blocks away or even 6 blocks away, they would be there. And you wouldn't see some of the problems that you have with some of these students. So I think, you know, We think we understand what's happening, but I think quite often we don't understand the depth of what's happening here and how all of these things connect, which is one of the things that we as Consolidated Social Work Services, it's really part of our mission is to make people aware of how those dots connect and how this, you know, when this tree falls down, somewhere else in the other part of the world, something else is affected.
Because poverty is created. It's very parasitic. And you criminalize everything. But before you can criminalize everything, you first have to make criminals of the people that you're wanting to put in prison or you want to get rid of. And so you have to, there's a man, his name is Raheem Shabazz. He is a award-winning journalist and filmmaker, and he talks about the pipeline to prison. And you create poverty simply by doing away with the jobs, then you close the schools, then you flood that community, that neighborhood with drugs, guns, and then you make sure you have enough prisons built so that this product that you are creating will have you will have some place to put them. Keep it in mind, you don't get paid if you don't have a body in the bed. So you have to contract with law enforcement, courts, et cetera, and you tell them, we'll build you a prison, but you have to keep it 99% filled. That is, in fact, what is happening. And our children are being tested. It's already a proven fact, fourth and fifth grade. They began to decide how many prisons they're going to need in 10 years. How old is a child in the third or fourth grade? What, about 10 years old? Okay, so they're supposed to be graduating at about 17, 18, 19 years old. Okay, so in 10 or 12 years, they know exactly how many prison beds they're going to need because they know the criminal culture they have created. That's connecting the dots. Poverty isn't something that just happened. It is created.
Thank you. We're just about out of time, so I really want to thank you guys for coming in this morning. But I do want to ask, give you another opportunity to give contact information and give specifics on how people can get involved or help out.
Okay, you can contact Esther Holzendorf at 816-965-8137. And you can call me. We would like for you to get involved. If you can put some paint on a wall, if you can do floors, if you can hammer a nail, if you can help with a garden, if you can just anything that you might would be willing to do an hour, 2 hours a day or whatever, give me a call. I sure would like to hear from you. We need you.
Okay, and I'll give information on the Community Capital Fund, folks, again. I do think that that's a place for you to start. They have different things going on there. 816-502-9584, and their offices are down at 19th and Vine in KCMO, and you want to get a hold of Christine Com.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks,
Thank
Esther.
You.